Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy analyst and writer for FriendsFantasyBenefits.com. Joining me on another podcast or prospect minute is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Good as you can be after a gut-wrenching football loss. But,
Man. I feel for you, dude. I really just like, don't get me wrong. Like, I didn't have a dog in that fight because I.
If you didn't know, I'm a Bears fan. For people that don't know,
I do. I feel for you just because I've been on that side of things. Like in baseball, like all I've known is, you know, one moment of complete misery and then a ton of joy.
Right.
You know. You know, being a Giants fan, but yeah, as a football fan, I know complete misery because I'm a Redskins fan. So, like, I understand that. I feel for you. That just sucks, especially after the season that they had. But we're here to talk about baseball, and we have a prospect minute that is going to be much longer than a minute.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about San Diego Padres, and that system is totally stacked. But before we do, remind everybody you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. So why don't you go ahead and just jump right into the Padres system?
Yeah, number one guy overall in a top five or six prospect, depending on where you go, Fernando Tatis Jr. 286, 355, 507, triple slash, 16 homers. 8% walk rate, 27% strikeout rate, and 16 stolen bases. You know, the season was ended. He had a season-ending injury that pretty early in the second half, so the numbers would have looked a lot better overall. But it's hard to believe that they got him from the White Sox for James Shields. That's a trade that's going to buy AJ Preller several times. extended time as a GM just on that theft alone. But Tatis gets Manny Machado comps on offense. It's hard for me to project that, but I mean, physically it makes sense. He's built a lot like Machado. He's going to play shortstop at third, not at an elite level like Manny does, but I do think Tatis could stay at short, and that's not something that has been in his future, you know, up till recently. It's kind of defensive questions, but I think he's going to stick. I think it's a 55 hit tool, 65 power at peak, probably 275, 28 to 30 home runs. It's a really, really good profile. I'm not sold on the stolen base output. I wouldn't be surprised if he hovers around 10 in his prime years, just because, number one, he's going to be hitting the middle of the order. You don't want him running. Number two, I don't really think he's a burner. So he's not going to post big stolen base totals, but it doesn't matter. This is the type of player that is it's a franchise cornerstone for San Diego, and he's one of those guys you don't mess with, man. He's top five prospect in baseball for a reason. It's a very, very exciting skill set. I don't think he has a meaningful impact this year. He might come up in September, but again, you know, that might be it at the earliest, because the Padres, again, he hasn't even been at AAA yet. He lost a half a year of development, only played 88 games this year at AA. But I'm a really fan of Tatis, and he's going to be a strong offensive player for a while. But I wouldn't draft him in redraft unless it's a draft a whole league and you get him in 40, 50, around 40 or 50 or something like that, because the impact's going to be minimal.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I don't see the Padres being competitive. So there's, again, that hurts the cause here.
I think the Padres could be competitive, but I don't think they're really.
They are a team that should take advantage of the slow free agent market right now.
I think they may end up doing that as well. So I think they could be like a Phillies type team. I think I talked about this with Paul Spohr on the Sleeper and the Bust, where they are competitive in season. They don't necessarily make the playoffs,
right?
But they kind of start peaking a little bit. Maybe
I think that's best case. That's best case for sure. I agree. I could maybe see that.
They could, but they could also finish last in the division.
They could do that. Even Tatis is destroying the ball in winter ball too. It's been fun to watch. find gifts of him all the time from the Lee Dom tournaments and stuff like that. It's been great. Dominican Winter League stuff. He's been fun to watch. He's keeping me through this offseason. But second guy on this list for fantasy value is Luis Urias, middle infielder. He might be playing a little bit of shortstop now that they signed Kinsler. And again, that'll hurt Tatis coming up because he already got a prospect at short. And Luis Urias, very similar game to what we talked about with Nick Madrigal for the White Sox system. 5'9", 185. Doesn't strike out, although the strikeout rate did hit 21% this year at AAA. Made a major league cup of coffee. And there's more power here. The home runs that he hits are just bombs. They're not home runs that a guy that you think with only 6 to 10 homer power ends up hitting. I think that Urias can hit 20 home runs at his peak, maybe even more, because the power there is unbelievable for a guy his size. 5'9", 185. He's hitting the ball. You know, on Prospects Live we have a video of him in Cincinnati hitting a ball probably in, you know, 10, 12 rows up in left field. I mean, it's a good poke, especially for a guy of his size. And it's more power than 6 to 10 homers as people originally thought. So I think he's kind of a guy that's going to take off. He's the bat-to-ball profile as he's getting stronger. Hand-eye coordination is obviously elite because he's been in the middle infield his whole career. So I'm very bullish on Urias. I think he's a top 25 prospect in baseball any way you slice it.
So is he Jose Ramirez type? I mean, I don't think he's not going to steal that many bases.
No.
But could he surprise in the power department in the same way that Ramirez did?
I mean, he's hitting a home run in the upper deck in Cincinnati, so like, I think so. I think he could. I wouldn't be totally shocked if he has a 30 homer season in his career.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not going to bank on it. You know how it is. People have spikes and everything breaks right for a year, but Petco's not that bad of a place to hit anymore. It doesn't have the same reputation as it did earlier.
It's much more neutral than it used to play.
Yeah, and I think Urias has the type of power I think he's going to be able to get out of there pretty more frequently than you think. I'm extremely aggressive on his power just by watching him in the fall league hit tanks when he was there 2 years ago. And again, I think he has this type of swing that's tailored to this era we're playing in, with launch angle and his premium bat to ball that other people don't have. So I'm a big fan, if you couldn't tell. But I think he's a good enough glove too. I think he's a better fit at second base, but I also think he can play short, and I think that's what he's going to do for the Padres this year. So with the Kinsler signing, especially until they flip Kinsler at the deadline. But I don't know. Maybe he'll cement himself as a shortstop. But the next guy, I'll just go straight down the list here. Mackenzie Gore, you won't see him this year in the bigs. He should go to High A, California, in the Cal League. Number one most famous thing about him is that delivery, right? Everyone knows with the leg up going up above the head kind of deal. Just shows you how athletic he is. He stays back. He's had some blister and finger problems this year, which is something to track. I know the minor league balls are different than the major league balls, but, you know, when you have finger issues and blister issues, it's never really a positive thing. But he did miss some time because of that. It wasn't an arm injury. It was just the blister thing. But, you know, I think it's a deep arsenal. He's one of the most advanced prep arms, 91, 94 in the fastball, big plus curveball, 79 to 81. Has a slider, which is pretty much just a variation of the curveball, but it's a little bit, comes in about 5-6 miles an hour quicker than the curveball does. Similar break, has a changeup, which is probably a future plus pitch, which would give him 3 with plus command. So I hate the delivery, but there is absolutely no reason for the Padres or Gore to change it because he commands everything. The balance is elite. The momentum and the torque is elite. It's just a matter. The only way I could see him changing it if he ends up having back issues or something later on in his career, which, I mean, I'm not foreseeing that, but I'm just trying to talk out loud here and think of anything that could get him to change the delivery, which I don't, again, I hate the delivery. But there's no reason to change it because he's been dominant.
Here's what I asked Doug Thorburn about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, what he thought of the delivery. And he said, great balance, even though the rapid leg lift finishes, he finishes with strong posture, but flexion of the spine in and out of his release point. He likes momentum, which combines his big leg go lift to create a long stride, and that combination gives him a deep release point when he lines up to the gears. He finishes low due to deep flex in the front knee that might be a strength issue and could be cleaned up over time. But right now, and again, this is a year ago, he lacks stability in the lower half after foot strike. He looked like he almost broke an ankle on one pitch in the video that he saw or that I shared with him. He needs to focus on strength, vertical balance, if he's going to be able to stay on the mound with those level of power. His timing was all over the place, very common for his age, but instability in his lower half isn't doing the repetition any favors. He said he's not bothered by the funky arm raise that coincides with a leg lift, but he's sure that coaches have tried to change it. He likes funky, especially when it's functional.
Man, who am I to argue with Doug mechanical-wise, but I agree with what he's saying. I'm a big fan of funk too, as long as you can do it. If you can't do it, it needs to go. But if you know what I mean, if you've proven that you can do it, you might as well stick with it. I would jump out of order here on my list, but I'm gonna talk. Might as well talk about Luis Patino right now as well. He's pretty much the right-handed version of Gore. If you've seen their side-by-side deliveries, they're pretty damn close. And Patino's just right-handed. I think Emily Walden tweeted it out. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. I mean, the deliveries are pretty similar. They both work with the pitching coach for Fort Wayne is Bert Hooten. He used to be the big leaguer. My guy over at Prospects Live, Lance Brozowski, has had a media pass with Fort Wayne this year. So he did plenty of interviews with Gore and Patino, and they're both grade A makeup guys. They both are willing to do whatever they need to do to get better. And Patino is a guy that's popped up. And, you know, Bert Hooten kept saying really, really strong superlatives and really good things about Patino in the future. But I mean, we pretty much have a number three probably starter here in Patino, who just popped on the scene this year. 94-95 on the fastball, can touch 97, has a plus slider that sits in the mid 80s, a low 80s curveball, and a mid 80s changeup. The two future average pitches right now are the change and the curveball. Fastball and slider are plus. The changeup gets plus grades for maybe its potential. He needs to figure out another pitch to use against lefties. The changeup obviously is the pitch right now, and he's trying to get the slider there. It's a little bit behind, and you know, can't use the slider at the back door of lefties yet because he doesn't have pinpoint command of it. But I'm a really big fan of Patino. He burst on the scene this year. I think he's a good mid-rotation guy. Chris Paddock. Everyone knows Chris Paddock, I think. Paddock was stolen from the Marlins, and I believe it was a Fernando Rodney trade. Would have been, what, 2-3 years ago? 2016, so yeah. Double plus change upgrade for Paddock. He had Tommy John. He missed most of 2017. He came back this year, and command is normally the last thing that comes back, right? But he had a 3% walk rate in AA. So that's encouraging. Strikes out 27% of batters in AA. Had a sub-2 ERA, 2.31 FIP in AA. My only concern with Paddock, and this is one that will be answered for me this year, is I worried about him going through a lineup more than twice, only because, you know, with Tommy John surgery and coming back from that, the Padres took it easy on him and he didn't. They didn't let him. They were real strict on his innings. I don't think he pitched more than 6 innings and only a handful of starts. And that's by design. That's not because he couldn't do it. I think they were just yanking him because they're trying to being conservative with his arm because there's special talent here. The mechanics are really, really quiet, easy, repeatable. The fastball's got some run. He's got a curveball, but again, the changeup is double plus, and that's how Paddock makes his money, and that's why I think he's going to be a number two starter eventually. The stuff here is elite. He's one of my favorite pitching prospects in the game right now. He's a top 40 prospect for me. It's a common theme. You're going to see a lot of those guys on the top half of the list here. So he's got a track. Xavier Edwards is one of my favorite guys from this draft. he's a switch hitter, but he only hit from the right side this year in Arizona. So we haven't seen him fully utilize that. He was 22 of 23 on the bases in the AZ, in the rookie league in AZL this year. That's obviously impressive. It's game-changing speed. He's a much better fantasy player than reality player just because of the stolen base department he's going to contribute in. But I do think he's a guy that can probably hit 8 to 10 homers at peak. He's developing strength. He's similar to what Nick Madrigal, Louis Urias type of player. I think he's a bat on the ball guy, but he can run. He's got an elite 80 grade speed, can stick up the middle, real slick defender at shortstop. Power's coming. He hasn't switch hit yet. He's billed as a switch hitter. The Padres, for some reason, only had him hit from the right side this year. He'll work on that and be better. He's a top 10 pick in your first year player drafts this year, so follow him. Esteri Ruiz is a personal favorite of mine, a guy that just puts up numbers. He was acquired from the Royals in a trade with like Brandon Mauer and Trevor Cahill and all them guys. 253, 324, 403, 12 homers, and 49 stolen bases in A ball. Low A. He's going to move up to high A this year. All these guys are kind of, most of them are in that same clump together. Ton of fantasy appeal due to the power, due to the speed. Has a 28% K rate, which you don't love. That's might ultimately be the downfall, but he's a better fantasy over reality player. Really good glove up the middle, too. Might have to move to the outfield just because of the middle infield glut that the Padres seem to be having right now, but that's not any fault of his. Next guy on this list is a polarizing prospect in Francisco Mejia. And, you know, you see what the Indians are at right now, right? They just traded for Kevin Plawecki. They have Roberto Perez and Plawecki battling out for the job with Eric Haas. And they let Yan Gomes traded him to Washington this year to cut some money. Knowing that that's the catching situation they have and they still dealt Mejia away, I know hindsight's 2020 and all that. They obviously didn't believe he could catch because they were trying to play him at other positions to get the bat in the lineup, but I don't really think the bat plays anywhere else other than catcher. So 293, 338, 471, 14 homers, 5% walk rate, 17% K rate while in AAA this year with the Padres and the Indians. He's traded for Brad Hand and Adam Simber. The Padres are in the unique position where it's Austin Hedges behind the plate, and we all know Hedges' good defensive skills. Hedges has the defensive ability to be a backup just solely off that, but we know he's not a non-zero, or we know he's a non-zero with the bat, meaning he can contribute stuff there. And he is like the inverse of him. He has struggles defensively and might not have enough there to be a big league catcher, an everyday big league catcher because of the defensive ability. But if he can catch a few days a week, maybe play some third base, maybe play some second base like he kind of messed around with in Cleveland, you have a perfect fantasy player then. And he's got plus bat-to-ball skills. He should be a strong source of batting average. The power's not where it needs to be, and I don't know if he's really ever going to grow into more than 15, 20-homer power. I think he's more of a line-drive guy, but I mean, he is a polarizing player. He's a good sleeper, I guess, this year in redraft form, in redraft formats. Hedges is better than a backup, so I don't know how the timeshare is going to work out there. But in two-catcher league, if you can grab Hedges and Mejia, I think that's a good way to go. I don't know, Justin, how do you feel about in two-catcher formats, like grabbing both guys on the same team like this?
I'm not a big fan of doing that.
Everyone was popular with that with Atlanta last year with Suzuki and Flowers. I remember reading a lot about that.
Yeah, I think that doesn't work out as often as you would like. I think you're right. I mean, this year he is catcher eligible, I believe, in league. So
I don't know about that.
I believe he is. I'll double.
He should be. No, he should be.
So, but I'm with you on Mejia, and I have been for a while in terms of I don't think he's going to stick behind the plate. And in spite of the fact that he's got a pretty good arm, he's just not a very good catcher. I don't think his game calling is advanced enough to catch on a regular basis. But if he can catch just even just once a week. Like, if he's giving Hedges a day or two off a week, that'll keep him as a catcher, and then he becomes, like you said, a much more interesting prospect. I still don't think he's the prospect that a lot of people, especially in the fantasy community, thought he was going to be.
I think,
or still thinks he's going to be, because I still think he's going too high.
I still think, like, the Padres must think, they're not doing everything they can to win now. I mean, that's not a secret. But, like, when he came over from the Padres, he caught like 200 innings in AAA. So that's a sizable chunk. He came up to the big leagues and he was exclusively a catcher, I believe, with San Diego. Yet he does have an 80 grade arm behind the plate. So maybe he can be like a Wilson Contreras, like not great defensively, but you know what I mean? And they kind of put up with it. Maybe that's like an outcome here. I don't think I know he's not as athletic as Wilson Contreras is, but you know, Hedges is starting to get into his arbitration years now. So maybe you could see the Padres moving on from him if they find a Mejia adequate enough.
It's so hard because Hedges is so good defensively and so good.
Hedges is like the modern day, I say modern day, but like he's the closest defender to like a Yadi Molina, a
Jeff Mathis.
Jeff Mathis kind of, yes, he's in that bucket, but he's got some power.
He does, but the problem is no contact. But I just can't imagine, one, that he'll become expensive via free agency or via arbitration, and that they would want to kind of lower that ceiling for the pitchers, because what Hedges can do behind the plate in terms of calling game and framing is, you know, about as close to elite defensively as you want. And it's such a huge drop-off from Mejia that the idea that Mejia is going to replace Hedges, which I think some people in the fantasy industry want to see happen,
I think it's more of people hoping than they're kind of parlaying that into what's going to actually happen. But, I mean, you look at Mejia, he's a switch hitter. There's a lot of shit to like here. And my issue, too, is we just talked about three young arms, right? Patino, Gore, and Paddock. Do you really want them throwing to Hedges, or do you want them throwing to Mejia? To me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, you want them throwing to Hedges. I could definitely see where the Padres employ something this year. Like, I know they got rid of Clayton Richard, but, like, he would have been a perfect guy to let Mejia throw to. Or, you know, to work with. Like, I could see maybe Mejia catching the two veterans in the rotation more and Hedges catching the younger guys. I think that's a really good way to go about it.
The question becomes, if he is going to only catch one day a week or, you know, one or two days a week and then play the field, it's not like the Padres have a lot of spots for him to go play. They've got a pretty stacked outfield.
Yep. I don't know if the bat's worth playing anywhere else. I think that's an issue too.
For sure. No, I completely agree with you. But you know, they may just want to do that just to, you know, give him time and let him develop and see what happens. But the question becomes, like, who is he replacing then?
And then again, here comes another issue that I have too: is if you're trying to have Mejia improve as a defender, is he really going to improve if he's only getting two, three reps a week? No.
He should go down to AAA. I don't know if he will.
I'm saying. And that's what I was about to get at, because you might just see him. I mean, the Padres to this day haven't added. I don't think they've added a veteran backup yet. I'm trying to look real quick without slowing my. I've had a computer.
I'll take it.
I don't want to like try to open up too many different windows, but I don't know who they signed at AAA or anything to be. If they signed a veteran to a minor league deal, that could obviously be the easy answer. You could see Mejia going to AAA and that vet being the backup to Hedges. Because I don't know if learning and to it's I'm very pro like rushing pitchers up early, because the only way you learn how to get major league hitters out is by getting
There's
major
someone named
hitters
Austin out. Allen.
He's also a prospect and he's not going to he's an offensive catcher that might not be a catcher. So, as of right now, it looks like Mejia's.
And they also have Luis Torrens.
They got him in the Rule 5 draft a couple years ago from the Yankees. Mejia, for me, I wouldn't be surprised if he spends a chunk of the year at AAA. You need to be aware of that when you draft him. Don't go crazy on the price.
You should not be drafting him this year. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Probably right. That's probably the way to go about it.
In redrafts, he's just not going to get. I mean, if you want to, you know, grab him as your C2 and just hope and pray that, you know, maybe he turns into something, I guess so. I think he's going to go higher than that in most drafts. He shouldn't be a C1, especially in your one catcher leagues, but even, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, in never, two catcher don't leagues, the same. You know, in dynasty and keeper leagues, he's going to be more expensive this year than he will be next year. So I'd rather pass on him. And if you really are interested, let this year kind of play out and then try to acquire him.
I think it's actually creating a buy low opportunity for Austin Hedges this year. I think, not that you want to go out and get Hedges, but like, I think you might be able to get him as your second catcher in a two catcher league. And that's fine. Just because I think the presence of Mejia is suppressing his value a little bit more than it should. But I think we've covered the angles on Mejia. It's an interesting player. I sit on the, to make a long story short of what we just talked about, I sit on the fence of him not being a catcher long term. And the question that comes with that is, where does the bat play at then?
And I think when he was traded to San Diego, it was probably the worst possible landing spot for him to stay as a catcher because of Hedges.
I don't know if that's accurate though, because the Padres, if the Padres traded Austin Hedges like tomorrow,
Mejia
jumps up into a top 15 option for me. But
why would they trade Hedges?
Other than he's about to get expensive. But I don't know how much he's going to cost.
He's not going to get super expensive because defensive stats don't, you know, play a huge role in arbitration traditionally.
Right. Yeah, no, you're right on that. And it's hard to quantify, too, because all the metrics might say Hedges isn't a good, but just by watching them, you know that they're not true. I mean, you've seen Hedges play a lot. You're a Giants fan. You watch a lot of them when they play the Padres, and he's really smooth behind the plate. I mean, and you don't notice him back there, and that's a good thing. You don't notice that he's there. Like, I watch a lot of the, you know, a lot of Cubs games by default. I live in Chicago, and I'm a Cardinals fan. You notice Contreras back there because he's loud. Loud, I mean, moves around quite a bit, doesn't give a steady target. He will cost you maybe, I don't want to act like I'm exaggerating this, but probably a strike an inning with how he receives the ball. And Hedges is the opposite in every way.
He steals.
And yes, he's, yeah, right. And I don't know how much to value that. I don't really buy the framing metrics. I don't buy that stuff. I just... catcher
more
defense,
an eye test for me, yeah.
Exactly, and that's what I was going to say, because I don't know. Maybe I'm spoiled because of the I watch Molina a lot, and I'm not trying to turn this into like a worship thing of him, but the value he adds to that team just by his presence alone is crazy, because he's an extension of the manager on the field, and like we've seen Joey Bart get superlatives with the Giants organization about because of how he calls his own game and stuff, and how he's a good defensive presence. You don't hear that about Mejia. And the weird thing for Mejia is Cleveland was so quick to get him in other spots while their starting catcher was Gomes hitting .185. So, I mean, that tells you something, right? Like, the defense isn't where it needs to be. And he's at the stage of his development now is he's already in AAA. Like, your learning time's almost over. Like, you got almost kind of have to be major league ready, and I don't know if he is defensively. But I've yet to hear like any major Padres quotes that say that he is or isn't. To be fair, so kind of I think it's kind of you're gonna find we'll know the answer to this question this in a few months. That's for sure. So, but Mejia, if I have Mejia in a dynasty league, I'm trying to deal him.
You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. All preseason long, we'll be bringing you the most in-depth analysis to get you ready for your drafts. There will be 30 team previews with 30 prospect previews during the month of January. That's 60 podcasts in 30 days. Then, we will be dropping almost daily pods until the start of the season. You can also get your 2019 draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit in ebook and paperback on Amazon.com. Or if you prefer, you can get it via email in PDF form. It has over 250 pages of analysis, player profiles, ranks, strategy guides, and prospect information for cheaper than the magazine you get in the store. Plus, we'll be updating both PDF and ebook all the way until draft season is over for any changes that happen in the landscape of fantasy baseball. Stay tuned all preseason long to Friends of Fantasy Benefits so you can be ahead of the curve.
But next guy we'll cover is a couple low-level guys. Well, Tirso Ornelas, I think a breakout here is coming. 252, 341, 392, 8 homers, 5 steals. Really good play skills, 11% walk rate, 19% stolen base rate. He's part of that big Padres 2016 international class. Really beautiful swing from the left side. Played the entire year as an 18-year-old, and he was younger than a lot of the high school bats this year, and he was in low A. Full season ball. There's some high school bats that were drafted that are older than Ornelas. So for him to put up a 109 WRC plus in a pitcher heavy league in the Midwest League, despite being 18 years old, is a really, really good thing. And I think now's the time to acquire someone like this, because while I don't think the ceiling is sky high, I think he's like a 15-15 guy and a nice guy to round out your roster with. You know what I'm saying? Like, from the outfield, he's not going to be a dynamic, you know, 30 homer, 30 stolen base guy, but I think he can give you 30, but a combination of 15-15 is how he'll do it. And really good plate discipline, really good swing. He's going to be a pop-up guy this year. Hudson Potts, 260, 335, 455 with 19 homers, 8% walk rate, 26% strikeout rate. He was in the Arizona Fall League this year too. Much the same kind of guy. Strikes out a little bit too much. He's got some power for third, the prototypical power for third base. It's mostly pull side, though. He's a dead pull hitter, doesn't really use opposite field very much. It's funny because he's done a complete 180 since his draft. He even changed his name, which makes it funny. It's kind of a new identity. But like when he was drafted, he was Hudson Sanchez. He was a shortstop. He was advertised as a glove-first shortstop. Now he's Hudson Potts, and he's a corner infielder with some power and a questionable defensive skills at third base. But that's where we are at now. I don't want to bank on him being a major leaguer, though, because the hit tool's got to develop for me. He's got to take another step forward with that. Strikes out too much. Dead pull approach. He's going to get exposed to the big league level to spin, especially down and away. So he's going to have to clean that up. He's in the Fall League, and you know, he came away with pretty much the same review as that. Not giving up on him by any means, but Hudson Potts is probably, you know, he's a low upside guy for your third base spot. Anderson Espinoza was the former ace prospect from the Red Sox. Had some Tommy John surgery, missed all year. I still think he can be a number one or two starter. I'm that high in Espinoza. His explosive stuff, Carlos Martinez-esque, Alex Reyes kind of quality stuff for Espinoza. Assuming he comes back healthy. We haven't seen that yet. Padres took it easy with him last year. He should be a guy to watch. A pair of lefties here in Logan Allen and Adrian Morjon. Logan Allen has got a deep arsenal. 4 above-average pitches from the left side. Adrian Morjon is an advanced Cuban projection guy with not a lot of physical projection because he's a small guy, a small lefty. But he's advanced for his age, pitching in Cuba, pitching against hitters much older than him. 27% K rate in high A. So I'm a fan of Espinoza. Everyone knows Michel Baez. Real fastball-heavy approach, but he can dial it up into the upper 90s. Changeup is the best off-speed pitch, but he's very, very fastball-heavy, and the delivery has a lot of relief risk. He's 6'8", you know, the issues with guys like that. Ryan Weathers was their first-round pick this year in the draft, even ahead of Xavier Edwards. Weathers was actually a top-10 pick. He's the son of David Weathers, former pitcher. He's a lefty. Really bad body. Doesn't get extension. But I think he's a mid-rotation arm. Pretty safe projection from mid-rotation arm. Already got to low A last year. Should get to high A this year with Gore and Patino kind of rushing them all up together. Like I said, really bad body. Real delivery that doesn't maximize his frame. Doesn't use extension. Really short arm on the release. But I think he's an unremarkable mid-rotation arm. Padres, man, it's a really deep system, really good collection of talent. Trying to remember if there's any other real quick names I want to touch on here. I think I got them all, but it's a really deep system. Owen Miller, I have to mention him because he went to Illinois State. That's where I went to school. He's a really good, probably utility player. But the system's deep. It's probably up there at number one system in the game, if not, maybe Tampa is, but they're 1-2. San Diego's done a hell of a thing, and I know guys, this is more for Chuck Anderson at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, but I know he's tired of hearing about how great AJ Preller is, but this system is this system is legit. So I know we've been talking about it forever, and pretty soon everyone else is going to know what we're talking about, because the Padres are going to be contending for NL West division titles here in 2 or 3 years because of this farm system.
All right. Well, that'll wrap us up for this episode. Matt, what are you working on?
Prospects Live, finishing up my last system scrum here. I have to do the Brewers. Not a great system, but I'm almost done. Then we have all we have left over there are the Brewers, the Tigers, the Mariners, the Dodgers, and the Padres. So that's all we got over at Prospects Live left. And then we're going to start into our top 100 season, so make sure you pay attention to that. We got some really exciting stuff with Smata and his graphs coming over to the site. Big announcement there. And I have a feeling there'll be a couple more announcements coming from Prospects Live soon. We've been doing great. Thank you for all the support we're getting over there. Be sure to check us out there, and be sure to check us out at Friends of Fantasy Benefits with that draft guide. It's damn good this year. I'm excited to be a part of it, excited to put our name on it, and really excited for some of the pieces that everyone submitted.
Yeah, it's going to be well over 300 something pages. I haven't even added the prospect pieces that you and Walter McMichael and Paul Martin are doing, and it's already like at I think 296 pages currently. So.
I don't know about you. Whenever I go to the bathroom, I always read stuff, so that's perfect bathroom reading.
Yes, and it'll be available in ebook or paperback on Amazon or PDF if you email me. And we'll get that all out there. It will be done. I will be dropping it in probably the next week. So one way or another, and the beauty of it is, it's going to be continuously updated. So as players get traded, as players sign, unlike like the magazine you buy in the store, or maybe some of the other draft guides out there, if you have the PDF form or the paperback form, I will continuously be updating it, and I will, ebook will automatically update, PDF, you'll get regular emails of updates, so that way you can continuously be on the right track throughout draft season as things change. Even have some injury stuff in there that's going to be continuously updated, so you have injury, you kind of know which players are injured, what their timelines look like from a certified orthopedist. So actually he's not an orthopedist, he's a physical therapist. So there's going to be a lot of great stuff in the draft guide, so definitely you're going to want to get that. It's fairly cheap. I think it's going to be like either $5.99 or $6.99 in ebook.
Nice.
And PDF.
Plus, you'll get updates when Harper and Machado sign. You'll have it
exactly. So, currently in the process of formatting and editing, I'm like 173 pages deep in that process. So
nice. So if it's like $6 and it's like 300 pages, that's like what, like a couple cents a page?
Yeah. I mean, it's about as cheap as you can get. So
yeah, it's a good deal.
That'll wrap us up. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.